I wish to refer to four short passages. First of all, in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 1 and verse 3. And it came to pass, in the 40th year, in the 11th month, on the first of the month, that Moses spoke to the children of Israel according to all that Jehovah had given him in command to them, after he had smitten Sihon, the king of the Amorites, who dwelt at Heshbon, and Og, the king of Bashan, who dwelt at Ashtaroth and at Edrei, on this side the Jordan in the land of Moab, began Moses to unfold this law, saying, Jehovah our God spoke unto us in Horeb, saying, ye have stayed long enough in this mountain. Turn and take your journey. The book of Genesis, chapter 35. Genesis 35. And God said to Jacob, arise, go up to Bethel, and dwell there, and make there an altar unto the God that appeared unto thee when thou fleddest from the face of Esau thy brother. And Jacob said to his household and to all that were with him, put away the strange gods that are among you, and cleanse yourselves and change your garments, and we will arise and go up to Bethel. And I will make there an altar to the God that answered me in the day of my distress, and was with me in the way that I went. And they gave to Jacob all the strange gods that were in their hand, and the rings that were in their ears. And Jacob hid them under the terebinth that is by Shechem. And they journeyed. The book of Haggai, prophet Haggai, page 1125 in this edition, chapter 1 and verse 7. Thus saith Jehovah of hosts, consider your ways. Go up to the mountain and bring wood and build the house, and I will take pleasure in it, and I will be glorified, saith Jehovah. Ye looked for much, and behold, it was little. And when ye brought it home, I blew upon it. Wherefore, saith Jehovah of hosts, because of my house that lieth waste, whilst ye run, every man to his own house. The Epistle to the Hebrews, chapter 12 and verse 12. Wherefore, lift up the hands that hang down, and the failing knees, and make straight paths for your feet, that that which is lame be not turned aside, but that rather it may be healed. Pursue peace with all, and holiness, without which no one shall see the Lord, watching lest there be anyone who lacks the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble him, and many be defiled by it, lest there be any fornicator or profane person, as Esau, who for one meal sold his birthright. For ye know that also afterwards, desiring to inherit the blessing, he was rejected, for he found no place for repentance, although he sought it, that is the blessing, earnestly with tears. I think, beloved brethren, the Lord gives us such occasions as these to comfort our hearts, to establish us in the truth, and to stimulate our desires for Christ. There's no doubt that there is always, there has been and is present and always will be the danger that we might settle on our knees. That was the trouble with Moab, of course. He was not emptied from vessel to vessel. There's always a danger, beloved brethren, of settling down and accepting abnormal conditions as though they were normal. God never does that. God has said, I have set normality before you, and if you wish to understand normality as it really is, take a look at the perfect life of Jesus. The one who, as a true Hebrew bondman coming in and accepting responsibility, was taken to the door and had his ear bored through with an awl, because he had said, in full committal to God and to we might say to people, I love my master, I love my wife, I love my children, I will not go free. And so God uses occasions just to stimulate, and so we have this point in time. There had been behind them the long wilderness trail. If they looked back over the waste, they would literally see the way strewn with the carcasses, alas, of those who had fallen in the wilderness. Beloved brethren, we're not amongst those whose carcasses have strewn the desert way. We're not of those that turn back, says the writer to the Hebrews. We're of those that believe to the saving of our souls. So let us go on, beloved brethren. That is the encouragement. Mr. Lawrence's well-known verses provide a stimulus to everyone. Let us go on. And that is really what Moses is saying. He says, or the Spirit says, at the beginning of this record in the book of Deuteronomy, that really, instead of 40 years, there need only have been 11 days. But here they are, at the end of 40 years of experience, of bitter lessons, and here we are, brethren, at the end of a period of time when we've had bitter lessons, but can we say we've been enriched by experience with God? J.N.D. knew that, did he not? In the desert, God will teach thee what the God that thou hast found. Patient, gracious, powerful, holy, all his grace shall there abound. So we're thankful for the lessons of the desert. But let us understand that whilst, as J.N.D. points out, the desert was never God's purpose, it became part of his ways, and the land is in view. And so the word is, as Moses reminds them, that you've stayed too long at this point, and the time has come to journey. He takes them back to the beginning. At this point when they're at the end. And we need to go back to the beginning, beloved brethren. If we've lost our way at any point, let us go back, let us retrace our steps and see where there was divine leading and where there were divine indications about the way that we should go. And what about these kings who've been met at the end? I refer to Sihon and Og. We all know about Og. He had an iron bedstead. 9 cubits by 4 cubits. Oh, yes, an imposing man, but a lazy man. I hope there are no such persons here. You must meet Og and conquer him. Because the apostle says, in all these things, we more than conquer through him that has loved us. He's one of the things that you have to conquer. This lazy person with a big bedstead, and so imposing. And he's one of the kings who's trying to block the way as you make your journey into the land. God's land of precious inheritance and the land of divine purpose, that land flowing with milk and honey, is before you. And this lazy king has been met. He's been met. Moses was really saying now, as he retraces past history, there's really no obstacle now in the plains of Moab. All we have to do is to go over Jordan and we enter the land. We sang that hymn, and didn't it touch every heart as we think of that blessed home? The home isn't in the desert, the home's in the land. The Father's house is there. That's where you enjoy your home. The Israelites were never at home in desert circumstances. Although they learned God in desert circumstances. And that's a very, very important point. And so he says, Jehovah our God spoke to us in Horeb, saying, ye have stayed long enough in this mountain. Is there something holding somebody up here? Something that is preventing you from going on in your spiritual history? Preventing you from making a straight journey across that wilderness soil and getting into the land? God would say, you've stayed long enough at this mountain. I am not going to suggest what the mountain is. It could be something. It's some obstacle that may have legitimately held you up to begin with. You know, we can't get any profit about talking endlessly about that dreadful system. There's no profit in that. There's profit in continuing the journey and going into the land and working the land, putting your foot on the soil of divine territory. God has promised that whatever you claim for yourself by putting your foot upon it becomes your own. Have you done that? I would appeal to my youngest brother and sister here. Have you done it? Do you know what it is to acquire divine territory for yourself? It's not acquiring divine territory to discuss the various sad histories of the brethren. That's not divine territory. Divine territory is in the holy divine inheritance. And God has blessed us with every spiritual blessing in the heavenlies. That's where the inheritance is. It's not down here. Although we enjoy it down here in conditions of flesh and blood by the Spirit. So it says, turn and take your journey. Will you accept this suggestion from me that there may be some who have delayed too long at this mountain and need to take the journey under divine direction, as we said this afternoon, because there's the pillar of fire by night and there's the cloud by day, and the cloud goes ahead and we follow it. And the time comes when we journey, and the time comes when we have precious encampments, but always and always the land is in view. And always that is the divine intention. If you had spoken to Caleb or Joshua, what would they have said? They would have said, oh, but we've explored the land. And it is indeed a wonderful land, exactly as God has described it, flowing with milk and honey, full of precious resources. And, moreover, what have they said? We are well able to take it. All men of another spirit. When the others refused to go forward, they were ready to move forward. And because the others were not ready, they accepted in the grace which belonged to another dispensation. They accepted to take their journey along with the rest of them. And suffer the experiences of a barren wilderness setting. And at the same time, of course, making themselves rich in experience with God. So that is Deuteronomy, the 40th year. A moment has been arrived at. Beloved brethren, the rapture is close. Surely it is. We surely know that we're not going to be here actually. We're soon going to hear that assembling shout to the voice of the archangel and the trump of God, and we shall all go. But let us be ready and let us be stimulated that if we have to move, and if there are further encampments, we're ready for them. But at the same time, spiritually, let us see to it that we make our journey into the divine inheritance and acquire territory and acquire property there. So, with Jacob, who is, I suppose, one of the greatest men of experience of the Old Testament, the time is reached when he has to make a move. You know, the time is reached, and with all of us, moments are reached when God says, now, it's a time to move. I've been with you so far in certain circumstances. I've helped you. And God reminded Jacob of that moment a long time back when he'd had an experience with God. He said, when you fled from the face of thy brother Esau, when you fled from the face of your brother, do you remember that experience you had with me? God would say such a thing to us, you know. He reminds us of these valuable moments of precious experience with himself. And Jacob had vowed a vow at that time, you remember, that if he would be with him on the road and would give him food to eat and garments to put on and bring him to this place, then he would do certain things. We sometimes are a bit too severe with Jacob, I think. We accuse him of making a bargain with God. Maybe he did. But Jacob also vowed a vow. And I would like to encourage the youngest here to vow a vow. That is to commit yourself definitely with real conviction of heart to what is right. And that's Jacob. He was really committing himself. He had an experience with God. And he had an impression of God and his house. And he said, now, if you'll be with me, I'll do certain things. But he vowed a vow. And let me tell you this quite solemnly, that if you vow a vow, God will hold you to it. He'll hold you to it. You people, you young people, and all of us who have committed yourselves to the Lord at the supper in the breaking of bread, Do you understand the solemnity of that? I remember as a young man when the brethren had spoken about my case and had decided that it would be suitable for me to come into fellowship, as we call it, to break bread. An older brother went to the bus stop with me as I was waiting for the bus. And he said, now listen, if in the weeks that follow now and for the time to come, you go away, say, to a cinema or some such place, you not only go yourself, but you take me with you, and you take all the brethren with you. That's the fellowship. You see, fellowship involves responsibility. And that is something that we have to understand, that if Christianity involves privileges, it also involves certain very serious responsibilities. But there is joy and divine confirmation and approval, I might tell you, in the acceptance of responsibility. So Jacob is a man of experience, and he's also a man, I would suggest, who's been prepared to shoulder personally certain responsibilities. And here God says to him, arise, go up to Bethel. Go up! We need to be prepared for the more elevated side of things. There's so many believers, Christians, who just think that Christianity is something that belongs to the lower level. Evangelization is right in its place, of course it is. But we have been called, as we were reminded this afternoon, into blessing because God himself has certain needs. And Bethel, Jacob knew that. We go back to his early impressions, and he knew it was the house of God. I'd like to say this, that as a very young child, I can look back and remember sitting in the morning meeting, as we call it, and getting certain impressions of the greatness of God. And I'm sure young people get these impressions. Be true to your early impressions, and don't lose them, and stand by them. And if you vowed a vow, remember God's going to hold you to that vow. And here is Jacob being told to make this journey an ascending journey, to go up to Bethel and dwell there. Dwell there! That's where we are to stay. Not at a low level, not at the low level of men and all their ideas and their talk of their own bigness and so on. Not at the level of man's world, but at the height of God's world. God's house. Go up to Bethel. And dwell there. Make your home there. How blessed a home. The Father's house. Unto the God that appeared unto thee. Have you had an impression of God appearing to you? It may be opportune to inquire of some young hearts whether they've really got a true link with Jesus as their Saviour, whether you've acknowledged him as your Lord. It's not wrong to bring in a gospel touch now, because if you accept Christ as your Saviour and own him as your Lord, that's the first vow you'll make, and you'll make others too. The God that appeared unto thee when thou fleddest from the face of Esau, thy brother. And now there are certain things that have to be done. If we're going to be suitable to the environment of God's house, we have to put away what is unsuitable. So these idols, Ephraim says, doesn't he? What have I to do any more with idols? Oh, to think that these things have charmed us, beloved brethren. Things which have occupied our time and attention and have cut God out, have robbed God of the place that is rightly his. I'm not suggesting what they are, but anything which robs God of a place savors of idolatry. He's not condemning them. He's saying, now listen, if we're going to be in the divine environment, if we're going to be in God's house, we must be suitable. So put away the strange gods that are among you and cleanse yourselves, change your garments. Cleanse yourselves. Purify yourselves from every pollution of the flesh and spirit. We must be suitable. How is it done? Oh, it's only done on the basis of the work of Jesus. Of course it is. Purification is there. The water is in abundance, provided and made available powerfully by the Spirit. Water for cleansing. And change your garments. Oh, you couldn't take worldly garments into the divine environment. You couldn't go into God's house with unsuitable clothing. Change your garments. And we will arise. We will arise. He's acting now. He's had the suggestion from God that he do it. And now he's doing it. We will arise and go up to Bethel. And I will make there an altar to the God that answered me in the day of my distress. Make an altar to God. Blood brethren, how thankful we are that we can say with the writer to the Hebrews that we have an altar. We have an altar. It has been preserved to us, a point at which God might be met on the basis of sacrifice, a point at which we might present sacrifices to God which are precious to him because they refer to Christ, the fruit of our lips. And so, they join it. They join it. Isn't it encouraging that we might get held up over certain points? We might get held up in being too occupied with conflict and all that, beloved brethren. But the time comes when there are other things that we must occupy our attention. And we must obey the divine call to go up and to find our place in the house of God. The house of our God, and the work of the house of our God, remember that. Nehemiah, we will not forsake the house of our God. I think Jacob would say that. Having reached a point, he would never depart from it. Beloved brethren, if we've reached a point, if light has been committed to us in our day, as it has been, there are other, beloved brethren, less enlightened, and light is sovereign, but if light has been committed to us, let us be true to the light that we have received. And so Haggai was quoted already in the reading. But it, these conditions of Haggai's day, which is a day of ruin, but it's a day when revival's being stimulated. It's a day of rebuilding the wall and rebuilding the temple. That's Haggai's day. Did you know that the wall has been rebuilt? Is there anybody who thinks that separation from evil is no longer God's principle of unity? Of course it is. What J.N.D. said in those early years still stands true today and always will stand true. It's a divine principle. And so the wall was rebuilt and the temple was rebuilt, the house of our God. But there are people who are thinking more about their wainscoted houses and the house lies waste. Haggai says, how sad it is to consider such a position. You consider for your own conditions and your own comfort and your own circumstances, and you won't consider for God and his house. Thus saith Jehovah, consider your ways. Will you not just stop for a minute and just think of whether what you are doing and the way you are living and the way you are behaving, just settled in your own comfortable conditions in your wainscoted houses, whether all that is right? Consider your ways. You're just earning money for a bag with holes. That's all it is. There's nothing of lasting and abiding value in material wealth. Nothing at all. The real wealth is the spiritual wealth. So consider your ways and just be prepared to move a little more energetically spiritually. You know, J.M.D. says of the second epistle of Paul to Timothy in relation to rekindling. The word is revive, he said, and it's a question of energy being required in the darkening state of the assembly. But that, brethren, that's what's needed at the present time. Spiritual energy and spiritual zeal. When we hear of the energy and zeal of these early brethren, of the early days of the recovery, with not so much light as we had, but oh, they had the love for Christ, and they had the zeal, and they had the energy. I would like us all to be more stimulated, to move, and to be ready to go up into the mountain. God said, if you'll do that, you'll get blessing to it. Go up to the mountain and bring wood. That's where you'll find the holy humanity of another man altogether. The humanity of Jesus. That's what I require. Not this kind of humanity that's so boastful of itself and thinks it can contribute something, living in wainscoted houses without much exercise at all, but just be stimulated into a little more spiritual exercise and to have a little more energy and go up into the mountain, and what you'll get is this, which is of real quality. It's the manhood of Jesus. And I can use that. I can use that. And build the house. Build the house. Did you think God's house could be built of any other kind of material? I know it's stone. I know it's stone. But the wood in the house is that kind of humanity. The cedar wood and the cypress wood. It's Jesus. And when you look, you don't even see the wood. It's there, but it's overlaid with gold. And God says, I will take pleasure in it. Wouldn't you like to do something that God will take pleasure in? Instead of living in circumstances that you're taking pleasure in, God says, I will take pleasure in it. You look for much? Oh, we had great expectations. But maybe on the line of the flesh, and when we got it, what was it? It was very little. But if we have the right kind of expectations with God, our expectations will always be satisfied, and our desires will always be gratified. Wherefore? Because of my house that lieth waste. Well, God thinks of his house. He says, all you think of is your own house. But God thinks sorrowfully of the condition of his house. Beloved brethren, in our day there's been a revival in relation to the house of God and the truth of the Christ and the assembly. And let us desire to place our energies wholeheartedly into the work of this matter. Finally, the end of Hebrews, the exhortation at the beginning of the chapter was to run with endurance the race which lies before us, looking steadfastly on Jesus. If you take your eyes off Jesus, your path will immediately become crooked. Just like the ploughman when he's ploughing a field, he has an object ahead. And if you want to plow a straight furrow, you must have an object ahead. And that object is Christ. But God is faithful. And when we fail, he uses his own ways and discipline in order to secure profit again from us. So Paul says, wherefore? Wherefore? It's because God is expecting the peaceful fruit of righteousness. Wherefore? Just think of what I've been saying to you, that you should have had your eyes on Christ and never taken them off. Turn your eyes upon Jesus, look full in his wonderful face, and the things of earth will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. That's a simple verse, but it's true. Let us have our gaze firmly fixed, steadfastly, upon Jesus. Wherefore lift up the hands that hang down. We do tend, beloved brethren, just to slacken off a bit. But let us be encouraged to lift up the hands. If there are any hands hanging down, these hands, Paul says, these hands, Paul never let his hands hang down. These hands have been used in service for the brethren. Think of the holy hands of Jesus, always used in service, never hanging down. But our hands, beloved brethren, often hang down. Let us be encouraged, as exhorted, to lift them up. And of course, to lift them up in service Godwards, lifting holy hands. Make straight paths for your feet, these crooked ways. Let us seek to follow a straight course, looking unto Jesus, the author and completer of faith. That which is lame be not turned aside, but rather that it may be healed. So we think of these lame persons. There are lame persons. Persons who need to be helped. Persons who, because of disability, it may be, are unable to keep a straight course. Paul calls them weak brethren. We've always had weak brethren. But if there are strong brethren, they should come in aid of the weak. So that all that it says, that which is lame be not turned aside. It is so sad in these closing days, when we should be enjoying the very best, the latter glory of the house exceeding the former, that there are certain persons being turned aside. But rather, not that it may be kept in the way, but it may be healed. Well, it would be lovely to have to see that healing was coming in. There are many wounds which need to be healed, but we should be helped as we seek to pursue the journey, and as we move under, as we have said, divine authority and divine direction. May the Lord encourage and help and bless us all together, for Christ's sake.